Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. A roller coaster week ending on a high note as the Nasdaq surges more than 2% and locks in its best week of the year. Does this prove the market doesn't really care about slower growth and persistent inflation? It's simply all about AI and tech. We'll debate that. Plus, Intel on the outs, the semi stock plunging to more than 10-month lows. Even as the rest of the chip stocks catch a bid, what's this company doing wrong? And is there any reason to be bullish? And later, Goldman glistens and the stock marks another big week, chowing down on Chipotle as the restaurant chain climbs further into record territory. And we're weighing the options on Eli Lilly ahead of the pharma giant's next earnings report. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq. On the desk tonight, Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, Steve Grasso, and Julie Beal. We start off with the two little letters that might mean more for the market than anything the Fed does. AI. The S&P closing out Friday with solid gains, climbing back toward the 5,100 mark, posting its best week since last November. The Nasdaq doing even better, up over 4% since Monday, and the Dow ending a second straight week in the green. Those gains come even as a slew of economic data should have spooked investors. GDP growing less than expected in the first quarter, and the Fed's favorite inflation gauge staying stubbornly sticky. Commodity prices also on the rise, with crude, Brent, and copper all higher ahead of next week's Fed meeting. But all that could not put a damper on the artificial intelligence parade. Alphabet surging to a record high after showing progress in its AI ambitions. Microsoft also climbing as AI boosted its cloud sales. And NVIDIA, the poster child of the business, jumping more than 6% today as it appears to be the beneficiary of all this AI spend. The stock's 15% gain this week was the best since last May. So does this action prove that AI matters more to the market than maybe the Fed? Tim, what do you say?
Temporarily, Mel. It's a fascinating question, and at times it does. And there's no question on a week. You can also look week over week. Part of that NVIDIA outperformance is that semis closed on the lows last week, and it looked like they were really about to break lower. They had underperformed. But it's no question that when you hear Google's investment in AI, and which translated into obviously a big upswing for the company in terms of the performance, but also the numbers underlying were fantastic. And they talked about AI enhanced search results, increasing engagement, and they had 400 basis points of margin improvement. Their op margin was some of the best. So there's reasons why those Google numbers were so good, and I don't think they were all AI, but they went out of their way to talk about the massive investment in AI. And so sure, you know, philosophically and secularly, when we think about that first big NVIDIA print, the question that the analyst community had, especially within tech, was, is this the beginning of a massive CapEx boom that's going to be ushered in by AI? Well, so far, so good. No question about it. I guess I just think that the Fed is still the most important variable for markets. And I think it was a week. We can dice and slice. Jim Bianco's about to be on. We'll talk about some of those dynamics. But I think the data this week was better. I think GDP was actually better. PCE today was very benign. And I think the Fed reigned supreme.
Yeah. Karen, what do you think?
I don't know. I guess I disagree a little bit.
Nice.
I think, okay.
Yeah, no,
so I think that, you know, for this slim number of stocks that are very much in this very AI centric, it definitely does matter. And it doesn't matter. None of the other things matter. They are in great shape financially. They don't have debt issues. They don't worry what interest rate costs are. That doesn't matter to their business at all. So they're sort of somewhat isolated from the Fed situation.
Right.
For the rest of the market, I think the Fed is still very much in play, and that's important. And certainly if we look at, like, you know, the IWM, it's had a tough time. And so I do think it does matter for the rest. But these suck all the oxygen out of the room, right? They're the biggest high flyer. They're the biggest companies. These are huge numbers. I mean, it started with those Meta numbers just on the AI spend that were really, you know, kind of mind-boggling. And then you saw, of course, yesterday with Microsoft and with Google that I don't know what inning we're in, but I do still feel like there's a lot of runway left to go in this AI story. It's interesting to me. I don't know. We were talking a little bit in the green room about Microsoft versus NVIDIA now. And, you know, they trade at the same multiple now. And that makes me think I should probably have more of a Microsoft bet and less of an NVIDIA bet, because at 35 times earnings, with Microsoft earnings that are going to be potentially more recurring, it would seem, certainly the Copilot model is that. We know that we have a Windows upgrade at some point later this year. I don't know exactly when that's going to be. That would be a catalyst as well. That to me seems potentially, it is expensive though, you know, just as a value person, 35 times is expensive, but 35 times with that kind of revenue and a potential catalyst there is, I don't know, feels a little bit more secure to me than 35 times what are giant lumpy numbers.
Right.
Also huge margin, but seems, I don't know, less certain to me.
Well, if there's some, for some reason, there's double ordering, there's inventory builds in terms of these chips. If some
right.
players decide not to spend as much for macro reasons than NVIDIA, then their sort of business might be a little bit lumpier than Microsoft, which will be a little bit more stable. So maybe that is what you're paying for. That's an interesting self. Would you rather?
Oh, I want to hear Steve's points, but I want to get into that. I'm ready to push back on Karen. But
okay.
Did you see how happy she was with the would you rather? I mean, I haven't seen you glow like this in years.
Because it's an excellent would you rather.
And of course.
I don't mind that Karen brought it up.
Of course.
And I will
Steve,
pose the question to you.
The ladies are allowed different, I think, rules than the men.
Yeah, of course. Fine. Well, it's been obvious. So I think Karen actually agrees with Tim more than I thought you were going to agree with him when you first said that you disagree. So I think that's probably what Tim was saying. The market is just these handful of stocks. These are the names that matter. So the Fed is not raising, though. That's where it would become different. If the Fed actually was going to, if now all of a sudden into the calculus, the Fed's going to raise one more time, mm-hmm. I think that would be the most important thing that would happen. So I do believe
These stocks go down?
Yes. These stocks would go down. But when you talked about GDP and worry about growth or slowing growth, there was no slowing growth in the names that Karen just talked about, that Tim just talked about. There's no ability to have that for you to say, let's overlay that slowing growth. What does it mean for Microsoft? Well, it means that Microsoft is still growing. It's still AI. So you're right. That's the most important thing in the room right now. When you drill down, if the Fed decides that now when we hear from Jay Powell and now it's looking like, hey, we're not only not going to cut, but we're still thinking about raising. That's a different dynamic that I don't think the market has digested just yet. And obviously, the more AI spend, the better it is for NVIDIA. So I still think I'd rather be buying NVIDIA than Microsoft.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
To Karen's, would you rather?
Can I just add one little thing? Monday, we will get some important news, right? We're going to see the quarterly refunding, mm-hmm. right? And that, I think, has the potential to...
If rates spike further, right, then that could really roil the market.
Yes.
Yeah. But this whole notion, Julie Beale, that, you know, things can keep chugging along just because we have this sort of, you know, the handful of stocks leading the entire markets higher for whatever, I mean... You may think that's horrible. You may think that's a fine thing. But for what it is right now, if AI spend is going to be lifted in calendar year 2024, which is what these giants have said, and there's some expectation that it can still have the momentum going to calendar year 2025, which is Bank of America's base case scenario at this point, then maybe things can keep chugging along if there is this spend of billions of dollars amongst these handful of stocks.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone is really cheering the idea that the market being extremely narrow is a positive thing for the long-term outlook, right? If you think about it, what's more important than the rates is the Fed ability to create a soft landing. Think of it as the Fed needs to deliver the soft landing baby. And AI right now, it's an epidural, right? It's just nice. It's helpful, like really helpful. But the Fed still has to do the hard work of giving us this soft landing baby. And that actually is much more complex because it requires so many more components of the economy, right? So I think that's the real challenge is how good is the rest of the economy? And right now earnings have been pretty mixed, right? And guidance has been pretty tentative outside of AI. So I think for the long-term health and viability of this market, you need to see a broadening and you won't really get that just on the back of AI.
Soft landing baby, as cute as that baby may be, I don't know if the baby's coming. I don't know, Tim, you sound like you might actually think that baby is going to be delivered by that magical stork known as Jerome Powell. But I don't know, given the data that we saw this week.
I've learned many times in my marriage from my wife is that I have no right to even opine on the birthing process, okay? And when you get into epidurals and things that I will never experience, I'm probably going to stay away from that, even though it's a very interesting metaphor. I do think that the Fed, their ability to, ease this economy down the road of where they have to have had to significantly change monetary policy in a very short amount of time is extraordinary, and we all recognize we still haven't fed. I would reiterate, I thought this week, in terms of the economy, if you look at the consumption spend in that GDP number, it was actually in line with the last two quarters. It was very strong. If you look at real rates, and I think this is something we're probably going to talk about with Jim Bianco, so I'll leave it. But I think the bottom line here is that the economy is part of the story. Mm-hmm. The economy is in very good shape. The consumer has a job. So it makes it, it's certainly very important for the mega cap tech companies. And back to Karen's would you rather, it's interesting because as you started to say that, and we actually flashed those forward PE numbers, Microsoft at a 38 times forward versus Nvidia's 35 forward. And those numbers move around a little bit. We know that. But ultimately, when you consider the growth that Nvidia has, but more importantly, the inherent margin in their business, it's so much more attractive to me. I would think at this point, because Microsoft is just out of their own success, this multiple has really moved higher. Wouldn't Nvidia be so much more interesting? I realize they're not going to grow at this rate, but right now that is so much more growth for the money and a margin.
But I think the market prefers a steadier stream. Even if it's less money over time, it will get a higher valuation than a lumpier stream, that even that lumpier stream is more money. I think the market likes that sort of, not certainty, but I think the market values that higher.
That's fair, but ultimately, aren't semiconductors...
Look at streaming versus hardware. Apple in itself is that same sort of analogy, right?
Except for the fact that chips ultimately, they should be easing into a business where they're not going to be the only game in town. It is going to smooth out. Growth is going to slow. It's going to be smoother. It's going to be more cyclical. It's going to be more predictable. But it's going to be at a higher rate and at a higher margin. And therefore deserving of a higher multiple. But, we can debate this one
so
for a
long
time.
So you're saying that you'd rather NVIDIA?
I would much rather NVIDIA.
Do you own NVIDIA now?
I own NVIDIA. Okay. I don't own enough of it. I'd like to. I really thought I was going to be able to buy it cheaper. And I still think this is, again, back to the Fed and the markets. I think, Microsoft didn't close on the highs. I mean, a lot of stuff gave back a little bit of a ground. Those were great headlines. Let's see where we get next week. We've got a Fed meeting. We've got a payroll number on Friday. You've got a lot of dynamics for the macro that I think could change just how good everybody feels today. Where were we last Friday?
You see a pullback in the markets, and you see a pullback in NVIDIA, but you see rates go higher. You still buy NVIDIA?
Yes, I think ultimately, and there is a bid below NVIDIA, less than there is a bid. It's got more of a bid to it on a dip than the market does right here.
Yeah,
I think the market is going to pull back. And I think I think we're going to test that 200 day, which is 4690 in the S&P. Very rarely do you tap the 50 and then not go through the 100, through the down to the 200 to test the 200. I feel as if I've been positive on the market. I feel as if even the bulls would like a status check on the market, because I'm not saying that this is going to be a long-term test. I think we're going to test it and rebound, but I'd like to see us test it.
It was a little bit surprising we finished so strong on the week going into another week where there are so many potential tape bombs, Julie. Plenty of reasons to de-risk going into the weekend.
Yeah, I think coming in front of us, there's definitely a lot of data that could point in the wrong direction. And so I'm surprised, but I think there is a lot of conviction around certain names. Some earnings have been really, really positive, and I think that that's given people more conviction that, the underlying economy is looking good. But I still see that there are real pockets of weakness throughout, right? If you look at consumption spending, where we are in terms of services spending is in line. Where we are in terms of goods spending is still ahead of where we historically have been. And so if there's a pullback on that, we're going to feel it in the economy pretty meaningfully.
All right. Meantime, the Japanese yen hitting a new 34-year low against the dollar after the Bank of Japan kept rates steady. The country's central bank signaling it intends to keep policy easy. Let's bring in market forecaster Jim Bianco. He runs Bianco Research. Do you think that there's intervention on the horizon? I mean, I feel like I ask this every week. But do you think that the BOJ will do something about this and that we could see some sort of, snap rally?
I don't think they will. I mean, they obviously can. And I think that the reason that they won't intervene and why they've allowed it to go to a 34-year extreme is they know it doesn't work. And they've tried it in the past, and now it's been 20 years since they've tried it. But every time they've tried to intervene, it works for about a day and a half, and then they stop intervening, and then the market goes right back to where it is. And besides, if you're going to intervene and try and force a market to the size of the yen-dollar exchange rate to a level, it's not going to work. It shouldn't work. You need to change your policies. You need to change your economics if you want to stop this decline in the yen.
So the $4.5 trillion carry trade estimate roundabout in stocks and bonds, that's safe in your view?
Yeah, I think it is, if that is still the extent of the trade. I think the trade is probably a lot less than it was, you know, say 3 or 4 years ago, especially pre-COVID, because before this period, there was a lot of yen strength, and then that should have probably shook a lot of those people out. But if you're in that trade now, the weak yen is going to definitely make it work for you, and there's no reason to be fearful of it.
Hey, Jim, it's Tim. But so let's take the next step. Outside of the buying power for the Japanese consumer abroad, et cetera, and balance of payments and dynamics for Japan that are pretty significant on a global stage, what does this mean structurally back to the Treasury market in your view?
Keep in mind that the Japanese are the largest buyers of Treasury securities in the world, not the Chinese, the Japanese are. And if their currency is continuing to weaken like it has been, you always want to be invested in the stronger currency. So that would, on balance, be pushing money towards the U.S. dollar, or and of course, then into U.S. Treasuries. And even though that's happening, yields are continuing to go up. So it really tells you about the underlying weakness that we've seen in the bond market. You've got the largest foreign buyer in the world with an excuse to be buying it, and yet we're still seeing bonds sell off, and we're still seeing yields go higher.
Jim, I want to pivot you to next week in terms of QRA on Monday and then also the Fed meeting next. You know, how do you see this all playing out? I mean, in terms of the positioning for QRA and then also for the Fed meeting?
Yeah, there's a lot of news next week. You know, we're packing a month worth of news into next week. Monday is the quarterly refunding announcement. We all remember November. It produced, you know, when the Treasury came out and said we're going to buy less notes and bonds and more bills, and it sparked a huge rally in bonds. They've played that card. I don't know if they can play that card again, because now at least everybody's looking for that. And it's going to be really hard to really surprise everybody. Remember, they still have to fund the deficit. So they just can't come out and say, we're not going to sell as many bonds as everybody thought. So I don't think the QRA might be a volatility event, but I don't think it'll be a trend changer event. Wednesday's the Fed meeting. There should be they're not going to do anything. The announcement of the Fed, what the Fed does, is going to be a non-event. It's going to be about the press conference and whether or not Powell says anything at the press conference about being more hawkish. And then don't forget, Friday is payrolls. And payrolls are 250,000 is what the guess is, down from 303,000. And keep in mind, the last couple of months, payrolls have been beating again. And if we get another beat, it just stokes the idea of a strong economy and stickier inflation.
All right, Jim, great to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jim Bianco, Bianco Research. We've heard some language from Fed speakers in the past week or so that a Fed hike is not the base case scenario, but that is something the Fed is ready to do should the data warrant it. If Chairman Powell says something to that effect, how do you think stocks would react?
Well, I think stocks would react poorly. I'm not sure he needs to do that, no matter what he's seeing, because as Jim pointed out, we kind of have a sense, and we even got this in the PCE, the Fed knew what this data was going to look like. They're probably going to adjust their statement on the economy from solid to, you know, something less than solid. Yeah.
Is that an official statement?
It will probably, I hope it could be. I think we're at a place here where the Fed is certainly, though, telegraphed to the market that we could possibly not have any cuts this year. Yeah. If they change to rate hike, it's a very different story.
I thought there was actually a little cover for the Fed today, right? So you had two things. You had GDP,
right?
A little cover there, I think. And then you had a slightly hotter, just slightly, which is a little cover for them to do nothing. I don't think it's enough for them to hike. Mm-hmm. That I think is not necessary.
Well, they're probably going to cut QT in half, right? So that's the, in effect, that is mm-hmm. still easing, right? So if you're cutting QT in half, that is dovish by its nature. So maybe we'll get some answers to that, because I'm a firm believer and they have to adjust QT before they
do
anything.
Is that priced in? Do you think QT is...
Yeah, I think to a certain extent, but when you say that you've already pushed off all cuts, people don't realize that that's equivalent, when it was full steam, it was equivalent to tightening by a quarter point, 25 basis points. So by cutting it in half, then you're down to an eighth. So now if you're looking at that, that is easing, and that's the first step before they actually cut.
Coming up, a burrito blowout.
Oh, boy.
Chipotle trading at record highs after earnings earlier in the week. We'll dig into what the big move higher means for the fast food trade. But first, Tesla shares hitting the brakes as a recent recall sparks concerns from regulators, what they are watching and what it could mean for the EV giant right after this.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee, right here on CNBC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Tesla shares taking a leg lower late today after the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration found a critical safety gap in its autopilot system. Philip Bowe joins us now to break down the details. Now, this concerns a recall, right, of vehicles already
Yes.
with the autopilot update.
Right. Mm-hmm. 2 million vehicles had been recalled by Tesla in December. And while the term recall is used, it was an over-the-air software update meant to address what NHTSA considered to be inadequacies in terms of how autopilot works when it comes to interacting with the driver, alerting the driver about potentially dangerous situations. They did the recall in December. The complaints haven't stopped. In fact, there's still been a flurry of complaints, and that has prompted NHTSA to now say, okay, you know what? We've closed down our investigation that was looking into autopilot that led to the recall in December. Now we're opening up a new one, looking at whether or not the recall that was put in place did the job. If it didn't do the job, what needs to be changed in order to better alert drivers about autopilot when it's not functioning, or to make sure that autopilot is functioning the way that Tesla has told regulators it will function? And one important note here, Melissa, autopilot is separate from FSD, full self-driving. That is a subscription service you pay for. Think of autopilot almost as an advanced cruise control system, if you will, that you see on a number of different vehicles, not just Teslas, but all brands. And so that's the king. That is the thing to focus on here. We're not talking about full self-driving technology.
How should we think about the cost to Tesla? Because that's usually how you think about the impact on a stock or a company. You think about the cost of the recall. If you're bringing the physical car in, obviously the costs are completely different. Over the air, it seemed like it would cost very little. So is there really, do you think, very little impact on Tesla?
In terms of cost, I'm not sure it's going to have a huge impact. Not a material one where you sit there and say, oh, my goodness, look at the impact of this over-the-air software update that's being done here. Where there is a cost, Melissa, and it's hard to quantify at this point, is the fact that you not only have this investigation by NHTSA, but you've got other entities, government agencies, that are looking into autopilot, the way it is marketed, the way that it is presented to drivers. And ultimately, the question becomes whether or not autopilot, which, you know, there are many people who believe that autopilot is a real asset to Tesla, separate from everything going on with full self-driving. There are a number of people saying it's a real asset, but is it also now potentially going to come back and bite the company, you know, to a certain extent if there has to be a larger fix to these problems?
Right. Phil, thank you. Phil LeBeau.
You bet.
It's a big week for Tesla in general.
Yeah, it feels like there's a tremendous amount of headwind. It feels as if they're in the same sort of spot where Apple was with China and then with our government picking on Apple, too. It seems like there was a whirlwind of just negativity about Tesla. Then you had Ron Barron on our network saying that the stock is bottom. So you brought up an important point. This doesn't really cost them to do an over-the-air the way a traditional recall would be. I think if they just have to harness that $28,000 vehicle and not just talk about robo-taxi, mm-hmm. talk about real margins, talk about really having the bandwidth to produce those cars, the analysts are only looking at it as robo-taxi, full self-drive. There's other parts to the story.
Yeah, I mean, the low-cost vehicle, Julie, is really what analysts are geeked up about. I mean, that's what lifted the stock off of earnings, right? It's not this talk about robo-taxi, which costs I don't know what, will bring in I don't know what, and nobody can quantify that, including Tesla at this point. But a low-cost vehicle gets you into certain markets where it's not operating right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, now having seen BYD overtake them in terms of market share is a pretty meaningful moment for them, right? Where BYD has been able to construct a low-price car for The big challenge, I think, with Tesla, it's not even what's happening in their production. It's just their valuation, right? When you're thinking about 60 times forward earnings and Toyota is at 10, it's really hard for me to understand why there's that much software that it's worth six times that. And I think that's really the primary headwind, is they have to be able to demonstrate a level of profitability that is very tough when you're building cars, especially low-priced cars.
Right. And you are in Toyota.
I'm in Toyota. I agree with Julia. I don't like the valuation having in Tesla for a long time. The issue now for people that are just talking about valuations also is the companies effectively and the events around the company have reset near-term expectations for long-term growth. So you've got a dynamic here where they tried to change the conversation in that earnings call about product developments being fast-forward. It's not second half of 25. Certainly no one believes them. Certainly people on this desk don't believe them. That's the dynamic. The shares rallied 24% off the bottom. So let's be clear. Bad news was priced in. Bad news going into those numbers was largely priced in, and the stock responded pretty interesting way. And this headline after hours on a Friday, this is not your driver for how you're making your investment decision on Tesla.
There's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Chipotle charging higher. The fast food favorite wrapping up a tasty quarter and trading at a fresh all-time high. We dive into the sizzling performance and what it could mean for other chains next. Plus, why buy Intel? The semi stock can't seem to get out of its own way. But is there any upside here? We'll sit down with an analyst who says there's still reason to be positive on this battleground name. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Chipotle continuing its blowout run today, up another 2% and hitting yet another all-time high. It is now up 9% since reporting better than expected earnings Wednesday and almost 40% already this year. The record coming just ahead of McDonald's earnings. They report Tuesday before the bell, though shares down nearly 8% year to date. But could Chipotle's gains be a sign of strength ahead for other restaurants, or are they just too different from McDonald's, which seems to be the case in terms of their clientele? I'm going to go to the man with the coupon. The man who goes to Chipotle at night and things are out.
And I'm a fair guy. I need to point out that the last couple of times I've been to my neighborhood Chipotle, they've been well stocked.
Have they had
very
chicken?
Polite,
because
by the
apparently
way.
The return of chicken al pastor has really caused a chicken shortage. Chipotle management is asking its own internal its employees to not have chicken with their meals.
Yeah.
Save chicken for the customers.
Well, I think there's pastor is lovely. I'm more of a traditional guy, but I do think that the multiple here is a combination of the fact that you've got store growth, you've got real growth, and you've got multiple expansion, and you're seeing economies of scale. They've been well rewarded for the loyalty program. It is working. It's you know, AI stock or fast casual.
Or,
I mean, are you kidding me? 40% this year on top of a massive move last year. Speechless valuation, you know, what can I say? It's tough.
It is tough. I mean, they've done an extraordinary job. Just the growth of the multiple. I mean, the growth of the margins and the growth of the multiple. I mean, both growths are historic and crazy good. The only one that comes remotely close, I think of it as Steve's Domino's. Right? They also seem to be very early and in digital and really run a really efficient company. Not that the others don't. But the multiple reflects that they're just not as good. They haven't been able to get the margin growth like those two.
Yeah, and when you look at Chipotle, they're international. That's where you think the growth can really come from. They have a minute amount of stores that's located outside of the United States, and they're in Canada. But that is a huge expansion possibility for them. The problem I have, and I think the CEO addressed it in an interview, is that you only have one person, you get clogged up, so there's lines. So he's talking about having those parallel lines where you're doing multiple at one time. And I think these are all efficiencies that he's bringing. And then don't forget about the stock split, 50 for one, June 25th.
Right. Julie, which fast casual, fast food stock are you going to be looking for in terms of the best, the most vibrant?
The
meatiest read on the consumer, if you will. Next week's a very big week. We just put up the board of, you know, McDonald's, Starbucks, Domino's, all reporting next week.
Yeah, I think probably McDonald's to get a better sense of the low-income consumer, because they are the ones right now that are feeling the biggest pinch from inflation. And so I think they can speak pretty well to that. And, you know, it's a very clear demographic for them. The others, I think, are interesting, too. Starbucks, for me, is more of a situation of how things are happening in China and what we should expect from that market and how that consumer is. But for sure, McDonald's, to understand what's going on with the low-income consumer, is pretty important right now.
All right. Coming up, bad intel. The chipmaker plunging nearly 10% as foundry losses explode. We'll chat with an analyst who says this semi stock is still a buy. That's next. Plus, Goldman's golden gains, the big bank's best week of the year, taking it to brand new all-time highs. We'll get more on the forecast for this financial right after this.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money Podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks closing out a wild week on a strong note. The S&P and the Nasdaq both having their best week since November. The S&P snapping a three-week losing streak. The Nasdaq seeing its first positive week in five. Snap shares soaring after the social media stock posted blowout Q1 results. The company seeing rejuvenated digital ad growth. Meantime, American Airlines shares dropping as Boeing delivery delays force the carrier to reduce long-haul international service. The airline now expecting only three of its six expected 787 Dreamliners to arrive before the end of the year. And Truth Social parent Trump Media shares jumping 8% today. CEO Devin Nunes earlier this week asking lawmakers to investigate potential stock manipulation of the company's shares. And Bitcoin, that dropped again today, closing out its fourth straight week of losses. It is on pace for its first negative month since last August. Well, Intel, that sank more than 9% today, hitting its lowest level since last June, and is now down over 35% this year, making it the second worst performing stock in both the S&P as well as the Nasdaq 100. CEO Pat Gelsinger telling investors last night on the earnings call that the company's new foundry division lost $2.5 billion in the quarter, and he gave a soft demand forecast for Q2. But one bull is buying what Intel is promising. Melius, head of technology research, Ben Reitzes, says his firm still thinks things will pick up in the second half of the year. So you believe him. You believe Intel.
Well, look, this has been a roller coaster ride. Last year, we were on an island recommending this. Saw it go to 50 and now back down. We overstayed our welcome. But I think that people try to complicate this story. It's so PC-driven. It's not even funny. It's over half the revenue. And PCs petered out. And we think they pick up in the back half. So Intel's a funny beast. You know, when they're beating numbers, they sound like geniuses. And then when things don't happen, you know, it's a pile on. And I think this is probably an overreaction. A lot of their peers are rallying. And the second half has a lot of catalysts. But right now is when you want to be thinking about buying it, because gross margins potentially troughed. And if gross margins start to get better, stock falls.
So you had mentioned that you put a buy on it, the stock went up. You were saying, just, you're welcome, so it's back to where you were before. What happened to PCs when the stock was at its height to now? Did you get that call wrong? I mean, I'm just trying to understand, did that market turn suddenly and that was unexpected?
Yeah, it did. What happened with PCs is we actually had some channel restocking. People went back to work. Things started to pick up. And then, obviously, you know, we only work 3 days a week now. So... So I think it lost
you
a little momentum.
Three in the office.
Yeah, I work six. But, okay. I think that what's going to happen is we, later in the year, start to see PCs pick back up again. There's expiration of support for Windows, and that should be a corporate catalyst. And Intel benefit. I mean, we've been pounding the table on, like, NVIDIA and, like, Arista and a few of the names that are a little more pure, Dell in hardware, and this has been the one that round-tripped.
Ben, so put into context, you frame the PC business, data centers, where there's been massive erosion and they've been beaten up over and over again. Should we care about that anymore? And ultimately, when we hear the company yesterday saying we think largely the business has bottomed, again, it gets back to that credibility issue. Do they not have credibility?
Well,
I guess it's clear they don't have credibility.
Well, you can't cut gross margin and have anybody. This stock just trades when gross margin gets like it does and goes down. The stock's not going to work. But if we're in the trough, it will. Now, servers also are a big part of the business. They miss the accelerator trend like NVIDIA. They do have a new one that if anything happens there, it's a bonus. They have Sierra Forest and another server that are ramping, should have better sales in the back half with better ASPs, and that drives sequential growth. But no one believes now because gross margins went down, the execution isn't crisp. Once that picks up in the back half, though, and we have some catalysts because servers do seem to have bottomed, it does seem like they have the best chip for AI, the best CPU for AI servers, and they could benefit. But obviously, right now it looks bleak, but this has usually been the time to at least trade it.
Mm-hmm. In the break, we were talking about how not many of your clients own Intel. They abandoned Intel after that disastrous call on foundries and the losses that the company was going to see. And I'm just wondering, what does management need to communicate to convince investors that there is an upturn, that all the reasons that you laid out are there in front of them to get them back in, the institutions, that is?
Well, look, they've cut gross margin the last two quarters, and that's obviously, I just keep harping on it, but you can't be doing that. That's the signal of execution. That's the signal that you're loading your factories and you're actually selling stuff. And you just don't have credibility when you keep cutting it. But the other thing, too, is there's a lot of people who don't believe in the AI PC. That, who cares? You don't need we're going to be doing AI on the PC. I think that there will be a halo effect from AI that drags up servers on the edge as well as PCs. Mm-hmm. And I think the Windows cycle helps. And when they beat numbers and there's channel restocking, all of a sudden they'll look brilliant. Just see the last half of last year.
Right.
So, Ben, when you look at it, though, is there a chance that it's more... You just addressed it in your last sentence, but is there a chance that NVIDIA, with its partnerships, builds more to take away from Intel with their PCs? Intel, the revenue is 58%. As you said, it's over 50, right? It's 58% is PC-centric. But is there a chance that GPUs are really where the puck is going, and they'll lose on that front, too? And then one little add-on, is there a need for new management? So instead of Melissa saying, hey, what do they have to say, is there a need for a new person to say it?
Well, let's talk about, the GPUs. So they missed it in servers, and they're getting on board late, and there is some upside there. But I think the whole AI trend can help the whole server market. You might need servers closer to where the data is once we start using it. But on the PC side, NVIDIA's strategy is a little bit more sell the GPU, their cards. I don't think they're going to actually make a CPU, but I feel that, Qualcomm's getting into the business. We expect them to have a little bit of traction, but Intel, really in corporate is the standard. And I think once that picks up, Dell will sell a lot too, and they'll do a little better.
Ben, thank you. It's great to see you. I was going to say have a good weekend, but you're working tomorrow.
Yeah. Right. Half day.
Amelius.
Thanks a lot.
Chart of the week. Goldman Sachs still glowing after its results. Should you keep banking on the gains in this name? We'll debate that next. Plus, another jam-packed week of earnings on tap. Streamers, semis, restaurants all ready to report, and we're laying out an options trade in one pharma name seeing outsized gains this year. The details when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Goldman Sachs having a golden week, hitting a fresh all-time high today. The stock continuing to rally since its big earnings beat earlier this month. It gained nearly 6% this week, making it Goldman's best week since last December. Is this a sign of strength in the big banks? Julie, what do you think?
Look, this new management team has really been focused on getting their return on total equity up. And I think investors had been hesitant because investment banking had been soft. But frankly, if you look at earnings results, it was pretty close to perfect. There's clearly a turn happening in investment banking. We're starting to see IPOs. And most importantly, I think private equity is starting to get ready to actually get involved in terms of doing transactions. So I think they're really well positioned, and that now the management team really has some credibility supporting it.
In terms of certainly their capital markets business, also a little volatility goes a long way. My voice just did a
Peter Brady.
It happens.
When it's time to change.
It's actually exciting to possibly be going through those changes this late in life. I think the multiple is nothing to get too excited about, but the recovery in certainly debt capital markets in an environment where I think that's a very active place and will continue to be. I love Goldman as a company. I don't know that you need to chase this one. Banks, the entire space has done very well. Citibank, Bank of America, and JP Morgan, the money center banks to me are a little more diversified. I still like Citibank here. I think they've got more room to close the gap on valuation to their peers.
And if rates go higher, rates stay, around 4.7, then what? Anything change?
I don't think anything changes for the big banks. If things are smooth and high, that's fine. Just big volatility, not as fun.
Yeah, Grasso.
Well, since Tim did sort of a would you rather, but not really.
Are
Wells
you
Fargo.
Would you rathering?
No, I'm just going to go a different route. Wells Fargo.
He's accusing would you rather, though, and
yeah,
I, you know,
a little bit.
That's aggressive.
I did a very soft hands, very, very Derek Jeter hands. Wells Fargo has that $2 trillion asset cap still on it. That's the it's performed very well, mm-hmm. but once that gets lifted, I think that could be the next leg higher for Wells Fargo.
All right. Coming up, another huge week of earnings on deck, and we are homing in on one pharma stock making waves in the weight loss drug space. How you can tip the scales with options. That's next. Welcome back to Fast Money. Earnings season is just kicking off. We've got a huge lineup of names reporting next week. Paramount, Amazon, and Apple all on the calendar. So let's bring in Mike Coe for a look at what the options pits are expecting in terms of implied moves. Mike, what do you see?
Yeah, so Apple, which has actually averaged about 6% over the last 8 reported quarters of the week, they reported implying only 4%. Amazon, which has averaged moves of about 8% over that same period, implying a comparable move of about 7.7%. Starbucks, which actually doesn't move that much usually, 3.9%, implying a move a little bit larger, 6%. And Lilly, of course, the big pharma stock, 6% average, also implying very close to that right now. There we saw actually that the calls were most active. It was May 3rd, 810s, trading about 235. It's the best of breed, but it's priced for it too, about 2.5 times as much as the other big pharma companies. I think people might want to consider hedging this one, though, by buying the June 700 660 put spread. That would cost about $11, or about 1.5% of the stock price.
Mm. What do we think about Eli Lilly here, Tim?
I think their numbers are going to be ridiculous. And the question is, what's in the price?
Good.
Yes.
Okay.
I think they're going to be strong, and, yeah. and these trends are getting better, and there's a broadening base, and their pricing has held up. So it's just going to be on the guide. I think it's probably going to hold up.
Yeah. Julie?
I agree. I think it's a foregone conclusion that this is going to be a very, very strong quarter. And I think it's just a function of understanding the stability of the pricing and how that plays into their guidance. I totally agree.
What if, and I'm just saying what if, like truly what if, revenues aren't quite as strong because they can't make enough?
That's an okay thing,
yeah,
right? I think it's not, we always talk about, is it a sale delayed or denied? Mm-hmm. I would think absolutely delayed. So that's okay.
Right.
That'll be an okay thing.
Yeah. Do you pay for Lilly versus others?
Yeah, I think Lilly has been best in breed. I think you would pay for that. But the chart does...
Best in breed in terms of all pharma stocks or best in breed in terms of weight loss?
Weight loss.
Okay.
Yeah, weight loss. And I think that's a good way to phrase it, because when I look at a pharma stock, I think, do they have a weight loss drug? That's my barometer right now, because you're not going to get that explosive earnings when you,
well,
when
you
go
so
there.
You have two companies. I mean,
what?
Yeah. Well, so effectively, you've got Novo and Lilly that are being rewarded
right
here. And you know, it's an interesting week. No, you're right. I mean, yep. But I think there's only two choices right now that are really the leaders, at least in the mega cap pharma. But
sure.
it was a week that also highlighted the weakness in people like Bristol Myers.
Yeah.
And Pfizer.
Exactly.
And, you know.
All right. Mike Coe, thank you. Up next, final trades. Final trade time, Julie.
You know, thinking of the Goldman results, I like Mola's here. MC.
Tim.
Chinese internet plays JD.com. Making a move.
Karen.
Yes, the Intel makes me think, not Intel, Dell. A lot of the same underlying things could happen and have been happening. Good execution there.
Steve.
SoFi traded back above its 50-day, and in after hours, it's above its 100. SoFi on technicals.
All right, thanks for watching Fast. Have a great weekend. Mad Money starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/FastMoneyDisclaimer.